Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the 49ers Insider Podcast on NBC Sports Bay Area.com. Introducing your host, San Francisco 49ers Insider, Matt Mayoko.
This week on the 49ers Insider Podcast, we catch up with Steve Mariucci, currently of the NFL Network, but formerly of the San Francisco 49ers, a head coach for six seasons. He had the very difficult task of replacing George Seifert in 1997. The 49ers immediately went 13-3 and went to the NFC Championship game. In his six seasons with the 49ers, the team went 57-39 for a 594 win percentage. Here is Steve Mariucci. All right, I'm joined now by the fifth winningest coach in 49ers history, Steve Mariucci. Steve, it's a pleasure to have you on the 49ers Insider Podcast.
Hi, Matt. Good to be on with you.
Did you know you're the fifth winningest coach in 49ers history?
No, I didn't really know that. Fifth.
Yeah.
Who are the other?
So you got George Seifert, number one.
Yep.
You have Jim Harbaugh, number two.
Yeah.
You have Buck Shaw, the first 49ers coach from those AAFC, the All-America Football Conference days. He's number three. Okay. A guy by the name of Bill Walsh, number four. And Steve Mariucci.
Wait, you're talking about percentage. You're talking about percentage. You're not talking about number of wins, are you?
No, talking about percentage, win percentage. Because some would say, Steve, that maybe you didn't get the full number of years that you should have had.
You know, you can't look back, Matt. You just can't look back.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I'm going to look back on one thing. When I was going through those coaches' names, one name jumped out at me, and it's Red Hickey. And the reason that name jumped out at me is because I remember when you had him out at practice, and it was an absolute joy to talk to him.
Yeah, yeah. It was always great to hear from a blast from the past, you know, where it all started. It was fun. And it was fun. And it was fun being around Bill Walsh. He was the president when I was there. And it's fun to know George Seifert, too. We still are very good friends. And, you know, it's funny with George. Get this. So you know, he goes to Carolina and then gets let go. And he's, you know, and he took a couple of years off, right, after the Niners when I took over. And we were lucky enough to win our first 18 regular season home games, which is crazy because it's still a record. But then all of a sudden he's coaching at Carolina and he's coming to Candlestick to play against the 49ers when we have this streak going on. And so when they came, I found out the hotel they're coming to, I got him a bottle of wine, a nice bottle of wine, one of those commemorative bottles of wine that says the Niners, the winningest football team of the decade of the 90s, you know? And so I put it in his room and some flowers and some chocolates or whatever the heck I put in his room. Said, "Welcome back, coach. See you tomorrow. And I'll be darned if they beat us in overtime." Snapped our streak.
You know, it's funny. I don't think I've ever asked you this question, but you know, when coaches get hired and coaches depart, there's always a lot of awkwardness in most cases. Well, I know there's always a lot of awkwardness. So there wasn't any awkwardness between you and George?
You know, it was what was really different. I had known George a little bit because I interviewed for the offensive coordinator job with him previous to that. And in fact, it was when he hired Mike Shanahan, and that was a great hire. So I got to know him then. And then when I got hired, heck, we had a press conference together with Bill Walsh and George Seifert and I, and Hedy DiBartolo and Carmen Policy. We were all together like one big happy family, you know. And then we even did something at the Super Bowl together with George Seifert and I. So there was a, you know, changing of the guards. And it was, you know, a little bit awkward, I suppose. But it was as friendly as you could possibly be. And because it was such a kind of a tight-knit family, and George had been there for so darn long under Bill and the whole thing. But to this day, we still fish together at times and respect the heck out of each other.
Yeah, that's great. Well, one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you, Steve, is because the 49ers are going through a season that isn't going great in the win-loss column. Yet Kyle Shanahan has managed, and maybe John Lynch is part of this too, they've managed to keep the locker room feeling like they're building towards something and a sense of optimism. Mm-hmm. And I've seen a lot of really bad seasons for the 49ers, and the only other time I can remember a bad team having this vibe to it was under you in 1999 and 2000. And I don't know if you've thought much about those seasons that really helped build toward the 2001 season where you guys went 12-4. But yeah. How did you do that? And have you sensed that from the 49ers this season?
Yeah, I have. I agree with you, and I've sensed the same thing. And it depends on, you know, first and foremost, the 49ers have a sophisticated fan base. I really believe that. They don't just go to the game and drink beer and cheer, and if you lose, they boo, and if you win, they cheer. It's not that way at all. They know football. They know the team. They know the history. And so, for example, back the years that you were referring to with me, you know, going through a 4-12 season was a bugger. Well, but they knew that the team had been starting to come apart in terms of having to get rid of some players because of salary cap issues. And then, of course, Steve Young gets hurt. And so you're playing with less of a team than you had in my first couple where we won, you know, 25 games or 27 games or whatever it was. And so the fans knew that. The team knew that. It was much younger. And so expectations change a little bit. And it's like, we're going to play with these young guys, not these veterans. And we're going to get better as a team. And it's going to be gradual. We'd like to be great overnight, but that's not reality. And it's the same thing now with the Niners. They were 2-14 last year. And the year before, I mean, they went through four coaches in 4 years, and it's just a revolving door. And so the roster has changed, and the expectations then have changed. And so, but people kind of get it. The team gets it. They know they're building. They're having to get better in certain areas. They got a lot of salary cap money to spend, which they will and should. A lot of it's going to go to the quarterback. And so, you know, that's why there's optimism there, because it wasn't like, hey, the team has just been in the playoffs 3 years in a row and now you're 2-10. No, that's not the case at all. And so people get that. The players get that. And it's like, all right, we're 2-10 now. We can win a couple more games before this season's over with. Players don't give a darn about draft choices. They want to, they're prideful now. 40% of that team won't be there next year. So they want to play as well as they can right now for their future, their careers, and you know, get good football on tape. And so that's why I think Kyle and John have kept that team and that locker room together. And when they win, it's like a darn Super Bowl win. Yeah. And when they lose, it hurts them, but they understand where they have to get better. And I think the a good bunch of guys, the camaraderie seems to be good, and their direction is very, very optimistic.
You saw a lot, you experienced a lot in your 6 years as 49ers head coach, but the first relationship you had with the general manager, Dwight Clark, I mean, you guys seemed to really get along. You were on the same page. Yeah. How important is that for a coach starting out to have, in your sense, a Dwight Clark, and mm-hmm. for Kyle Shanahan to have John Lynch?
Yeah, so important to have. You know, it's I kind of make an example of like a marriage with a mother and father, two parents at the home, versus having a single parent, which is more difficult. It can work, but it's more difficult. So having two people you know, help make decisions and help run an organization. Two people that get along, two people that are like-minded, makes for a little bit easier transition through the ups and the downs. It seems to me, it's not perfect, but it can be done both ways. But this is what I learned in Green Bay, where Mike Holmgren and Ron Wolf ran an organization, and one coached and one was in charge of personnel. But boy, did they get along, and they saw things for the most part on the same way. So going to San Francisco, I was hoping for that. I'll be honest with you, Dwight's a very good friend of mine now. I just had lunch with him again. We have lunch that some of us, whether it's Tom Rathman or Kurt Reynolds or Fred Formosa or Jesse Sapolo or Steve, it's just all kinds of 49ers on Tuesdays. On most Tuesdays, we have whoever can make it goes over the hill to Santa Cruz and have lunch with Dwight Clark.
That's
like
awesome.
Tuesdays with Maury. Have you ever read the book?
Yes, I have. Mitch Albom.
Mitch Albom. And so that's what we call it, Tuesdays with Maury. I mean, Dwight Clark. And so we have a good time. We tell stories. Dwight's in his wheelchair right now. As we all know, he's fighting ALS, and he's having a bugger of a time. And keep him in your prayers. Yeah. But he really enjoys getting together with the fellas.
And Steve, I saw him a few weeks ago. He hasn't lost anything as far as being a joy to be around, has he?
Love him to death. And you just, he's lost so much weight, and but he's an inspiration to all of us. And so, anyway, you know, going back to your question, Dwight and I got along like two peas in a pod. We're of the same age. Dwight Clark, you know, and once in a while in warmups, we'd go out there and we would reenact the play, the catch. And I would throw it just as well as Montana did, and he'd go catch it.
I'm sure.
He would have fun doing that. But the reason I respect the heck out of Dwight Clark is because, you know what, Matt? He was there every single day. He worked harder than any GM I was ever around, by far. Not even close. And after him in San Francisco and then in my Detroit years, I didn't have that same person with the same work ethic as Dwight Clark. I mean, he was there on Saturdays watching the darn walkthroughs just to make sure everything's okay. And
you mean he didn't fly home on Saturdays or later in the week like some other general managers?
Saturdays. There were some Thursday flights. Anyway, let's not go there.
Okay, but we're not going there.
Dwight Clark was always there. And there were times I'd walk in and he'd be arguing with some other general manager about a trade because we had some times there. We won the first 2 years, but then after that, when we got Steve Hurt and Garrison Hurst hurt and everybody's gone, and we were like, man, we were trying to put this team back together, you know? Put Humpty Dumpty back on the wall, and he would be like yelling at somebody because they changed their mind on a trade, and like and I'd walk in and go, "You okay? You okay, man?" And he was as competitive then at the gym as he was on the field, and I really appreciated his work and how much he cared about the Niners, and we had a great relationship, still do to this day.
Yeah, that's great. Hey, do you miss coaching?
I miss some of it some of the time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I got to tell you this, Steve. When you first took over as coach, you see those pictures of you. By the time you left, I mean, you looked like you had served a couple terms of a presidency. I mean, you aged quite a bit.
They're dog years. They're dog years. The best years of your life, but they're dog years, all right? They count for seven. And so, because you never leave your job, and I'll be honest with you, coaching football is not the only job in the world that you work every single day, and you never see your kids enough or your wife, and you have pressure and all of that. There are other professions that are very busy as well. Let's face it. Let's be honest. But what happens is since football and NFL football is America's favorite pastime, it is. And we have 8 million talk shows and podcasts and everything else. And now social media and everybody's got opinion about their team. And it's so out there that it's constant. It's constant. You're great and constant. You suck. And it never ends. And I think the coach can handle it most of the time. It's the family, the wife, the kids that hear about it at school every day of their life. It's nonstop talk about your dad. And even if you're winning, you know, the opponents hate your guts. And if you're losing, your own fans hate your guts. It's just, there's nothing like it, really. There's more important professions that, you know, you're not a brain surgeon. We're not an air traffic controller. We're not working in the emergency room. There are so many professions that I have a sister that's a nurse, and I've watched her work in intensive care. And I'm going, oh my God, this job is so important. And you don't get paid enough. You just don't. And you're saving lives. But you take it all into perspective and with a grain of salt and appreciate the job you have. And can it be tough at times? Absolutely. Is it fun? Absolutely. And I know that because the relationships that I made when I was coaching, I still have today, many of them. I still have today. And that makes it all worth it.
Well, just in full disclosure, we're taping this on a Friday. The podcast drops Tuesday morning, but you are so busy on your NFL game day programming for the NFL Network that it's tough to carve out some time on the Sunday or Monday. But I wanted to ask you about the current 49ers before I go back and ask you about three guys you coached in the past. Jimmy Garoppolo, 49ers made this midseason trade. What do you think about just the future and how this kind of sets the tone for the offseason with the 49ers already having the guy that theoretically will be their quarterback of the future already in the building?
Yeah. Yeah, there's clarity right now, at least at one position in the building. And that's not to say that C.J. Beathard doesn't have a career in the National Football League. I believe he does. But right now it looks like Jimmy Garoppolo is the guy, and he's a good guy, and he's a worker, and he's ready to do this. And the reason it was a smart move is because, you know, you can, the Niners are going to draft fairly early. Let's face it. They're going to have a chance to get most any quarterback coming out in the draft. Is it Sam Darnold from SC? Is it Josh Rosen from UCLA? Is it Josh Allen from Wyoming? Is it Baker Mayfield from Oklahoma? Who is it? Well, even if any one of those guys are going to have a super long learning curve. They just are. And especially on a team that has a lot of needs, okay? They're not all going to go to a team like Carson Wentz did, where it was a very good football team and you can win a lot of games early. They're going to have to go through some growing pains along with their team. And so with Jimmy Garoppolo, he's so much further ahead than all those young kids. Having sat behind Tom Brady over there in New England and having thrown the ball so much at Eastern Illinois, he comes further along than any rookie ever will. And so that's why it was such a good, solid move. And the style of quarterback he is a good fit for Kyle Shanahan's offense. You can move him around with some play action keeps and movements. He can extend plays with his legs. He's not quite the same athlete as Russell Wilson, but he's still very mobile. He's not a category of the drop back quarterback. He's a guy that can do most everything. And his maturity, good looking Italian guy. I just like the whole thing. I mean, it just makes a lot of sense. Now they can build their team around him.
Most Italian guys are good looking, by the way.
Oh, man.
I don't need to tell you that.
You said most.
most, yeah. Okay. All? Want to ask you about three guys. One is a guy that I think should be in the Hall of Fame, and he hasn't even gotten into the semifinalist round. Have you ever met a better professional than Bryant Young?
Oh, you know, you watch him, he's coaching for the Falcons. You see him last night or on Thursday Night Football. And so I love the guy, love the family. He went through a tough time losing his son, Colby. and very difficult. But what a pro, what a human being, what a player. And I, one of the images that when I reflect on my coaching career, in which one of the things that bothered the heck out of me, Matt, was watching guys get hurt. Still does. Drives, it just drives a stake in my heart to watch these guys get hurt and end their careers. And you know, we saw it with Ryan Shazier. I mean, keep our prayers going for him. He's got the back surgery now, the Pittsburgh Steelers linebacker. Just awful to see a guy laying there. Well, what I remember, remember a lot of things with Brian Young, but remember when Kenny Norton, it was friendly fire, ran into Bryant Young's leg and he had the tib-fib fracture against the New York Giants. Were you there? Sure you were.
Monday Night Football, yes.
Gosh, I ran out there because when players start looking at the sidelines, flagging in trainers and doctors to come out in a hurry, you go, oh gosh, what's going on? And so I ran out there with him, and BY had the leg that was bent over, you know, going sideways like Joe Theismann. We all remember that one when LT hit him. And I was holding his hands, both hands. And he was just, he was in so much pain. And then when both teams come out, the Giants came out too to take a knee. I remember going to the hospital that night with my wife to see BY, in the hospital because he was, you know, obviously needing surgery. He had several surgeries on that leg, but darn it, you know what? He came back. He came back with a rod in his leg. It was a long rehab, and it was keep your fingers crossed, man, because it was a tough deal. But he came back, and I mean, this was, I'll be honest with you, this was one of my fights with management. This is one of my fights with management in San Francisco. You can only have so many fights with management, and then you end up losing, right? They started using this analytics kind of system. Where the heck it came from, it's beyond me. And whether he was not getting enough hits on a quarterback or tackles for loss or whatever statistics, whatever, that they didn't want to pay him what we paid him. And I bowed up. I mean, I stood on the desk and threw a tantrum. And I said, you know what? I don't give a damn what your analytics say, because this man is worth more to me and this team and this organization than your stats, because he's the leader in this locker room. When he talks, he's like E.F. Hutton. People listen. Because he's soft-spoken and he's professional and he's the man and he's the good man. He's the face of an organization. He's like how you want your kids to grow up. And I said, he runs the defense in the off-season. He calls those guys out for workouts. They show up. When he wants to pick it up with a practice, he'll say it and they pick it up. So it doesn't. So all your analytics, you know where you can shove them, because – I think he's got leadership skills and he's got the clout in this locker room and the respect of this staff that I need him on this football team for as long as I can have him. And we got to have him. So that was one of our disagreements.
You won it. You won that disagreement, or you won that argument, and you were absolutely 100% correct.
Well, you know, you might win the battle, but you lose the war at the end because you can't disagree too many times. But anyway, he meant that much to me. And every coach on every team and every level, whether you're talking about high school, college, popper, you got to have those kind of guys on your team. They're hard to find. But when you have one, he's your leader. He's your coach on the field. He's your voice. He's the guy they listen to, even if they don't listen to you. And so you got to have a BY on your team. He's a stud. And so, I know he's been on the top 100 Hall of Fame list before. and he probably doesn't get enough votes because he did get hurt and he did miss playing time. It's unfortunate, but he's as good as they get. We played with Chris Dolman, and when my first year in 97, we won games. Hell, Jerry Rice got hurt in the first game. He missed the whole season except for a half a game against Denver. And Steve Young got the concussion, so we played a little differently, you know, with Steve and ran the ball more often than he would prefer. But we had a great defense, and it was because of BY and Dolman and Stubby and some guys. But BY, he was the man.
Yeah. So another guy who is up for the Hall of Fame, and he's in the top 25 as he's been for three straight years and will probably be in the top 15 again. But who hasn't gotten in spite of his Hall of Fame stats is Terrell Owens. And, yeah. You know, the knock on him, and I don't think I'm speaking out of school here, is that the knock on him is that he was too much of a distraction off the field. You coached him. You saw the production on the field. You saw some of the other stuff. What are your feelings? Does Terrell Owens belong in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah. So throughout his career, I think I can say this, that I've coached T.O. more than any coach, more than any other pro coach, whether it's Andy Reid or Bill Parcells or George Seifert or a college coach or high school. I had him for 6 years. And I saw the best of T.O. and I saw some tough times with T.O. Saw it all. And does he belong in the Hall of Fame? Of course he does. And I think a couple reasons why he's not in yet. He will get in. I think there are some people that vote that he may have rubbed the wrong way at times and don't want to budge yet. That's, I guess, their prerogative. I don't know. The other thing is, you know, I think that position, if you look at the position, Matt, you know this, a lot of great receivers have to wait to get in. Not everybody is fortunate like Jerry Rice to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. They don't get in. Michael Irvin, who I work with, had to wait to get in. Chris Carter had to wait. Tim Brown had to wait. You know, now T.O.'s having to wait. It's not unusual for receivers to be log jammed at the position and have to wait a while. And waiting 2, 3, 4, 5 years is not the worst thing in the world either. You know, once you're in forever. And so when T.O. gets in, I don't say if, I say when. He will have a bust in Canton that when they turn the lights out, he gets to talk to anybody he wants in that room all night long. And so I know it's been
forever.
And I know it's been a little controversial because his numbers say that he's better than most guys that are already in. And we all know that he's pissed off a lot of people along the way for whatever the reason in different cities or whatever that is. But, you know, you're not supposed to vote on should the guy be in the Vienna Boys choir or not. You're voting on his performance on the football field. And we have seen him dominate and play well for a long, long time. And so, yes, he needs to be in. The caveat this year is there's another guy named Randy Moss, who's the first ballot guy. And do they take them both? I don't know if they take them both. Do they take one over the other? Well, that's for the voters to decide. They're both going to be in. They will both be in soon. And it's a matter of who gets in this year and who gets in next year. That's how I see it.
Yeah. Well, Steve, again, I want to thank you so much for joining me on the 49ers Insider Podcast. And as part of the podcast, I always talk to Jeff Garcia. I don't know if you know this, but Jeff is now an analyst for our 49ers coverage on NBC Sports Bay Area. So Jeff will be coming up right after I speak with you here. But what are your thoughts on coaching Jeff Garcia and just what he was able to accomplish during his time under your tutelage and just his time in the NFL in general?
Jeff Garcia, talk about a pleasant surprise for the Bay Area. You know, here's this kid out of Gilroy, the garlic capital of the world, and he doesn't get scholarshiped out of high school. He goes to JC, ends up at San Jose State, doesn't get drafted. You know the story. He has to go to Canada to prove himself. And let's face it, Bill Walsh, who coached against him from Stanford against San Jose, knew about him and kind of liked his style. And yes, Bill pushed to get him a tryout with the Niners. I'm glad he did. So glad he did. And I was reading something, you know, Jeff's second year as a starter, he was one of only a couple of quarterbacks ever in his second year to throw for 4,000 yards and have a 95 passer rating. You know, these two young quarterbacks, Wentz and Goff, have a chance to do that. Goff has a better chance, but they both have a chance to do that. And Kurt Warner did it, but that's it. I mean, he did some things really unexpectedly for the Niners and played well, and he was tough and gritty, and he had to follow, you know, guys like Joe Montana and Steve Young. And talk about, you know, he and I have kind of a kind of bond, because I had to replace Walsh and Seifert, for crying out loud. Well, he had to replace Montana and Young. And we just had a couple of guys from small towns that I do the best they can. And so it was a pleasure watching him go to 4 Pro Bowls in his career. Can you believe that? I mean, when I coached him, he was like 188 pounds soaking wet sometimes, maybe 190. And that's all he was. But man, he was mobile and he was tough and he was gritty and he was determined and he handled it well, and very, very proud of what he accomplished as a 49er.
Well, Steve, you handled this appearance on the 49ers Insider podcast very well. I thank you so much, and I look forward to seeing you at some point down the road.
All right, Matt. Well, thank you for having me on. You bet.
Now we're joined by Jeff Garcia. And Jeff, you know, you played a few years for Steve Mariucci. Just what kind of sticks out about playing for the old head coach?
Oh, loved playing for Coach Mooch, and I did it twice, not only in San Francisco, but I joined him in Detroit, which wasn't quite the same experience that we had in San Fran. But just talk about a guy who's just very passionate, great energy, always positive, really finding ways to focus on the positive and build on that, and really a veterans type of coach, really put it upon the players to control the locker room, the leaders to lead, and allow him and the coaches to coach and not have to babysit or patrol the environment there. But playing for Coach Mooch was awesome and really enjoyable. We did some great things together there in San Francisco. Really, he took a team that was toward the tail end of accomplishment and so many great things, and probably had gotten a little bit on the old side and really had to turn it over into a younger team and a lot of new faces, a lot of new bodies, and a new quarterback that was following the legacies of Steve Young and Joe Montana, much like he was following the legacy of Bill Walsh and that whole thing.
One of the things, you know, I asked him about at the very beginning, and the reason I wanted to talk to him is, you know, this year's team kind of reminds me of the team that you guys had that was, you know, between playoff teams, in that, you know, you guys didn't win a bunch of games that one year, but I never sensed that the locker room got away from being a good locker room. And my question to you, Jeff, is, you know, having been there through that time when things weren't going great, you guys were young, but the locker room kind of kept an optimistic view of things. What does it take to have that kind of locker room when things aren't going well?
Yes, I think, you know, not looking at the 1999 season, I think the 99 season was a year of just a lot of change and a lot of recognition that this team had gotten old. And so throw that year away and go into the year 2000, where now all of a sudden I think some questions are being answered I'm stepping up as a quarterback who actually can play the position and maybe bring some consistency there. So, hey, we don't have to go out and look for a new quarterback. We got a guy who's actually playing the position relatively well and doing what he needs to do. We're looking at other positions. Where are we at in the defensive backfield? Where are we at the wide receivers, the running back position? We got Garrison Hurst back. We got some things that really started to fall into place. And as much as we didn't win a lot of games in 2000, we were 6-10, but we were very competitive. We were on the verge of really turning some of those losses into wins. And we could see that we were really close. And I think that helped really maintain the locker room environment to not become a negative situation or a finger pointing situation. We had quality leaders. We had a Bryant Young on the defensive line. We had, Jeremy Newberry and Derek Deese. And we had guys like Garrison Hurst who had been there through some positive years and coming back. And so we had guys in that locker room that knew what it was all about, knew the ways of winning, knew that, hey, we were close. We have a good group in here. We just need to continue to build and work. And eventually those games are going to go our way, which the next year they did. We turned that 10-6 season into a 12-4 year and back into the playoffs.
A lot of heavy lifting remains for this team to see if it can get back in the playoff hunt for next year. But let's go to Twitter, and it's Ryan John Jay, or I should say at it's Ryan John Jay, asked this question. He says, what is the one thing that Jimmy Garoppolo has done since joining the 49ers that demonstrates that he is a franchise level elite quarterback?
Well, I think he, first of all, has eliminated mistakes. You see the way that the offense has been able to put drives together to get into the red zone. Now, they haven't all led to touchdowns, but he's been a great decision maker. He's been very accurate with his throws. You see when he completes balls that receivers are in a position to continue running for yards after the catch. The balls aren't thrown behind. They're not low. They're not having to leave their feet for many of the throws. That is key to turning what end up being fourth downs into first downs. Now, granted, last game against Houston, they were not very good on third down. But, hey, outside of that, they put together a number of drives that got him into position to put points on the board. And that being said, I think just his decision-making and his accuracy has been so much better than what they had prior to him stepping on the field. And his timing, he's getting the ball out on time. Even when he has a free rusher coming off the edge, which happened a couple times with Clowney, he's able to step in there and throw an accurate ball and make a play. And those things just hadn't been done prior to his existence on this team.
Well, so much talk about the offense and Jimmy Garoppolo. I want to ask you a question about the other side of the ball. Robert Saleh is a first-year defensive coordinator. The 49ers have some young talent on defense, but, you know, there are some pretty glaring needs, I think, as well. Specifically probably cornerback. They can use somebody. I think they still need a dominant pass rusher. But as you watch the 49ers defense this season, what do you think about the job that Robert Saleh has done and where the defense is as far as putting the team and putting the offense in a position next year to be a playoff contender?
Yes, I think Robert Saleh has done a great job as a coordinator. I think when you take a team that is as young as they are and as inexperienced as what they have showcased on the field, and to bring that defense together with the changing turnstile bodies that have been stepping on the field for him, they have allowed this team to be competitive in games. That stretch of games where they lost five games by three or less points really was on the defense, giving them an opportunity to stay in games, to be competitive in games. They've done that week in and week out. There have only been a few games this season where the game has gotten away from them. And considering they haven't really had a great pass rush. They haven't put a lot of pressure on quarterbacks. They've been very solid against the run game. They've had some holes in the defensive backfield that have had to be filled in at times, but they continue to battle. I think you've seen some play out of some young guys that has been very impressive. I think the young safety, Adrian Colbert out of Miami, has stepped in and has done an excellent job. He's shown his physicality back there as a safety. Reed, as a veteran, has had to step into linebacker position at times and play really out of place, but has stepped up and done a job. And obviously we see the talents of Foster when he's on the field, the playmaking ability that guy has and how he can just range from sideline to sideline. So there's some players, there's some tools to really build on. And he's done a great job of really keeping the focus on the execution of the defense as a team and not allowing these guys to break it down individually and to really take away from the team concept.
Well, the 49ers have won two in a row. They're going for three in a row. It should be fun on Sunday at Levi's Stadium as Jimmy Garoppolo makes his first home start. And Jeff, I will see you out there at Levi's Stadium on Sunday.
Sounds great, Matt. I'm excited about it. The energy should be great. Hey, great opportunity to beat the Tennessee Titans coming into town.
The 49ers Insider Podcast on NBC SportsBayArea.com.